time the wind blows puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
And for the first edition of Abandoned Manitoba for 2026, we once again welcome Gordon Goldsborough from the Manitoba Historical Society. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning, Bruce, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. We haven't been around for a couple of weeks, so remind me what we are discussing this time.
Well, before we get into that, I just wanted to maybe update our listeners. They may recall that 2 weeks ago, I talked about the role of four Roman Catholic priests in founding Manitoba's credit union movement. I asked that if anyone knew of others, well, to let me know. Our listeners, well, of course, they're diehards. They came through. They told me that in 1939, priest Damasus Van Dyke was instrumental in founding what is known today, because it still exists, as the Belgian Alliance Credit Union. So our tally now stands at five credit union priests.
Didn't he just turn 100?
Well, I don't think so. I think he's been gone for quite a while now.
That's a different Van Dyke. Okay, back to today's topic.
Okay, throughout its history, the city of Winnipeg has had 49 mayors. But I think few could match Steve Juba for sheer flamboyance and charisma.
And popularity.
Yeah, absolutely. People even today think fondly of Steve Juba. He was the city's 42nd mayor. He served from 1956 to 1977. That's a record-setting 21 years in office. No other mayor has come anywhere close. And he was also Winnipeg's first mayor of Ukrainian ancestry. Mm-hmm. So really quite a trailblazer. He championed development and lower taxes. And I think as a result, he earned the admiration, particularly in the business community. But there was one corner of that community that absolutely loathed Juba. And the feeling was mutual. That group were the city's tattoo artists.
I did not know that.
Well, so, I didn't either. And in fact, it's thanks to a friend of mine, Jason Woloski, who set me straight about this. I didn't know that, Juba just hated it. And there is a bit of history there, and we'll talk about it.
Well, tell us a little about tattoos in the first place.
Well, of course, the practice of inserting colored material beneath your skin to create patterns, well, it goes back long before recorded history. We don't know when people first began doing it. We do know that from the 16th to the 19th centuries, it was especially common among groups like sailors. Well, in fact, I think that's almost the stereotype, you know, a sailor with, you know, a big anchor on his arm, or soldiers. But, you know, I wanted to pin down, you know, were there tattoo artists in early Manitoba, you know, when Manitoba first became a province? And I couldn't find any reference to it. I looked in some of the old books, no reference to it. The first reference I could find in historical newspapers, because, of course, that's pretty easy to search, was a mention in 1909, long time ago, but fairly recently, of a guy named Professor Eddie Poffert. Several early tattooists styled themselves as professor, and I suspect this was to lend a little bit of respectability to their craft. If you call them professor, they maybe are seen as more talented maybe than they really deserve. Mm-hmm. Poffert appeared in a classified ad. He described himself as an expert tattoo artist, but he wasn't advertising his services. He was looking for a lost dog, which apparently was also tattooed. So somewhere running on the streets of Winnipeg, there was a tattooed dog and he wanted it back. Now, the scarcity of tattoo advertisements in early Manitoba newspapers suggests to me that the trade operated largely, you know, underground, you know, word of mouth. You know, you found an artist by a friend recommending them.
Gotcha.
And then you didn't scan the classified ads. For most of society, tattooing was still held in pretty low esteem. I found a 1926 newspaper article that made that clear, claiming, and this is a quote, "The intimate art of tattooing had its origin among the untutored and slightly cannibalistic natives of New Zealand and the South Pacific Islands." I'm not sure if that's true, but that's what they said.
Right.
Yet, even that article admitted that by the 1920s, tattoos were becoming somewhat more acceptable among the upper classes.
So in my experience, I think a couple of my mom's brothers had tattoos, mostly, I think, from the armed forces.
Yes.
Other than that, nothing really. So what about the mainstreaming of it? How did that happen?
Yeah, well, and you're absolutely right about the military connection. Mm-hmm. You know, I read that quite a few soldiers that returned from the First World War sported tattoos. But the real surge began in the early days of the Second World War because tattoo artists in Montreal was the gateway through most, you know, through which most of the Canadian military personnel passed on their way to Europe. They reported a booming business. Soldiers were dropping in to get a tattoo before heading overseas. In 1940, a tattooist known as Professor Paul, there's the professor
another
again,
one, yeah.
Noted it wasn't just servicemen that were lining up for ink. Women were having their boyfriend's initials tattooed on their arms and legs, I guess so they could, you know, think of them fondly as they were far, far away. But he also pointed out the obvious flaw in that plan. If one happened to change boyfriends, as he put it, I've blotted out more initials by changing them into roses in the past 6 months than I've done in the last 25 years. So there's a flaw. When you get something pushed into your skin, it's going to stay there a good long time. By the 1970s, the dam had burst. Tattoos were no longer limited to sailors, soldiers, or the adventurous few. Almost anyone might get one or several. Well, today, of course, they're widely seen as a form of individualism and self-expression. And in my experience, at least, they're especially common among chefs and other restaurant workers. You go in for a meal and you'll see the chef working away and his arms are just covered.
Wow.
So, Bruce.
Yes.
Do you have any tattoos?
No, I have zero tattoos and zero desire to ever get one as well. How about you?
Same thing. I'm creeped out a little bit by the thought, you know, pricking the skin up to insert pigment under it and must hurt.
So what was the deal then with Steve Juba and tattoo artists?
Well, again, I need to thank Jason Woloski for drawing my attention to Juba's deep dislike of tattooing. Juba believed the practice was unsanitary and it could spread diseases such as hepatitis.
Mm.
His distaste came to a head in June of 1964 as he was leaving a public engagement at the Royal Alexandra Hotel on Higgins Avenue here in Winnipeg. Someone apparently asked him how he felt about a new tattoo parlor that had recently opened across the street from the hotel, and that was all the prompting he needed. Juba marched across the road, he strode into the shop, and he confronted its proprietor. This time, it wasn't a self-styled professor. The artist was a man named Joseph Vertomen, but he was better known by his nickname, Painless Poncho. I guess because he worked so well that it didn't hurt, mm-hmm. I guess. Juba demanded to know whether he had a license to operate. And Poncho replied that before he opened his shop, he had written to the city license inspector who had reported that, nope, no license was required. So as far as he was concerned, he was perfectly entitled to be there. Poncho then asked the mayor if he intended to get a tattoo, if he was a customer. And of course, Juba said no. And though Poncho said, okay, you're not a customer, and he pushed Juba physically out of the shop. I guess it led to a little bit of an altercation, but that was not the end of the matter.
What happened?
Well, turns out a month before Juba's confrontation, the city's medical health officer, Dr. Roper Kadam, had circulated a revised New York City health code that linked severe hepatitis cases to tattooing. Kadam wrote to the provincial deputy minister of health to suggest that Manitoba's Public Health Act be amended in a similar way, essentially to prohibit tattooing across the province. The provincial government, well, it didn't act on his recommendation for reasons we don't know, but Juba's run-in with Painless Poncho seems to have galvanized the city council. Maybe they had Juba there arguing for it. So in July of 1964, barely a month after the mayor's interaction with Painless Poncho, council amended its health bylaw to include a new clause, quote, "No person shall practice the trade or art of tattooing or cause any person to be tattooed within the city of Winnipeg unless that tattooing is done under the supervision of a duly qualified medical practitioner." You'd have to have a doctor or a nurse there, and of course that wouldn't happen. So in effect, the amendment shut down the tattoo industry in Winnipeg, and it stayed that way until the summer of 1987, you know, over 20 years later.
Wow.
Council finally approved a licensing bylaw to allow legal tattooing. Once again, And of course, Juba was still around by that time. He was no longer the mayor anymore, but he was around. And of course, inevitably, reporters asked him his views on this change, and he was adamant. He said, quote, "If they want to make it legal again, there's a lot they should consider. There have to be strict safety standards so these shady types won't be attracted back to the city."
Well, speaking of shady types, what happened to the other guy? Was his name Painless Poncho?
Yeah.
What happened to him?
Well, so in 1976, that's 12 years after he had been kicked out of town, he wrote to the Winnipeg Tribune newspaper to report that he was now practicing his craft in the red light district of Antwerp, Belgium. So in other words, he'd just gone somewhere else where they were more favorably disposed to tattooing. Right. But unfortunately, the trail goes cold at that point. And, you know, I try as I might, I could not find out what ultimately became of Steve Juba's unlikely nemesis. What is clear, though, is that those who championed tattooing as a safe and creative form of self-expression have prevailed. Even so, well, again, no personal intention on my part of following the trend.
Well, thanks for that, our first Band in Manitoba of the year, Gordon. And what's up for next week?
For many years, the Manitoba government has operated an invaluable store devoted to maps of every kind. Recently, however, it announced that the shop will close at the end of March, arguing that most people now get their maps online and therefore they no longer need the service it provided. Even if that's true, I worry the closure will have some unfortunate, unforeseen consequences, especially for historians like me. And that's going to be our discussion topic next week.
Yeah, we reported on that on CBC News a couple of weekends ago, and I would for sure bet that you would be against it.
I am, and I will tell you why. It has nothing to do with maps, I should say.
Oh.
But there are implications that are involved that I think people should know about.
Well, I can't wait for that. Thanks, Gordon.
We'll see you then. Bye-bye for now.
No. Every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba. Many moons.